This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Tuesday, it's the 16th of April, 2024. Coming up today, Android 15, more accessibility news, also limitless AI, and web accessibility. What's wrong with overlays?
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Oh, Sean Preece, how are you today?
I am gorgeous, thank you, Stephen Scott. How are you, more importantly?
Well, I've still got the old, but I'm getting there.
You're sounding good, I've got to say.
Thank you.
Well done. Did you take the afternoon off, have a little sleep with a hot water
bowl? I did. Oh, it was great. Although, you know, the problem is it's the Amazon deliveries. You know, every 5 minutes, bang, bang, bang on the door. And you know what's worse?
What?
And this is really, this is when you, this is a first world problem. Without a shadow of it. Considering what is going on in the world right now, this is not a reason to shout. But for me it is. My Ring battery died in my doorbell. And you know what that means? I've got to take the battery out, I've got to charge it, and then put it back in again. It's an absolute disgrace.
By hand, on your own. I don't know how you cope with the world. Let's see, now, I'm surprised by that. Did you not get a man in to wire it up?
Or woman. Sexist.
Sorry. Did you not get a person in to wire it up?
No, I didn't. And it was funny because I did ask an electrician, and I think we just have very lazy electricians where I live, because the general response is, it's too difficult.
How is it difficult? Well, unless you haven't got
a doorbell. Asking me. I don't have a clue. It could be difficult. I don't know.
Yeah, but, that's true.
And also he said things like, you know, to drill holes through walls. Do you know what? Forget it. I can't be bothered with that. So yeah, we just put it in. I mean, I was thinking I should maybe get one of those solar panels for it. You can get solar panels.
Hang on. Wait, stop. How often do you have to charge your doorbell up? Once every 3 months.
No, it's once every month at least.
No,
absolutely.
Way.
Are you kidding me? We got a lot of parcels around here. Our doorbell is going a lot. And you know, I'm doing that live view thing. I'm talking to the door, so yeah, I'm using it all the time.
Okay.
So yeah, the battery doesn't last that long. I also, if I'm honest, I can't really work out when it's charged. So. Most of the time, it's probably going in with like 40% charge anyway.
Well, does it not tell you in the app? Well, it does tell you in the app. I will rephrase that. It tells you in the Ring app.
It does. Yeah, it does. But, you know, you have to also know when it's finished charging. I mean, if only there was some way of taking an image and having that image described to you, then I might actually know. I'll probably do that today because it's currently charging at the moment. So what's good is I won't get interrupted by... Amazon parcels because I will, because what'll happen is instead
of... they'll just bang on the
door. Exactly. Instead of that, they'll just bang on the door. And it's funny because we've got one of these alarm systems that if you bang on the door hard enough, you'll set the house alarm off. So I will say that is the best doorbell you can get because the entire house is vibrating.
Sirens going off.
Screaming. Yeah.
Sometimes I need that. See, the answer is get yourself a porch. That's what you need. And then they just open the door and they throw it inside. It's
love
great.
A porch.
Then every time I try and leave the house, I fall over boxes in the porch. But you know what? I'd rather that than me having to move and answer the front door. Talking of that, actually, it's interesting because my Ring doorbell is one of the first gen ones, you know, because I am cutting edge, as you know. And
yeah, you're not updated either, which means they're cheap.
No, that's very true. It's massive, by the way. It's like an old VHS tape. It's huge. But I need to take it off and charge it. I take the whole thing off. I can't take the battery out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, it didn't have the removable battery. It's just the entire unit you charge.
But it's fine. It's absolutely fine. It's not even screwed onto the mount. I just lift it off. Anyone could steal my doorbell.
No one steals them. At least where we live. We're very lucky where we live until, obviously, you know, terror starts raining down upon us. We're so far off so good.
Everyone assumes it's screwed in, but it just isn't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I think I need a new one, right? I want some of the new features, some of the object recognition and whatever, and just a better connection. The connection isn't great when I'm talking to someone. So I'm looking around. There's so many out there now. I mean, you've got the Amazon doorbell, which I don't quite understand because Amazon now own Ring as a company anyway.
So is that the Blink one?
Oh, maybe it's called Blink now because Amazon own Blink. I honestly, I don't know. There's some from Eufy as well. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's all about the accessibility. So if any of our listeners, hello listeners, have hello. You got any experience of any other brands other than Ring for video doorbells? Let me know. Well, you know what?
It's funny, isn't it? Ring has become the Google of doorbells. That's what it's become. So you talk about these kind of doorbells and video doorbells, and that's what you think about. You immediately think of Ring. That says a lot about the marketing that goes into that. But you're right. There's so many different types, and you can get ones that are smaller. They can easily stick on the door itself.
Yeah.
You don't have to have them screwed into the wall, that kind of thing. So yeah, there's loads of choice, but you're right. It all comes down to the accessibility. And the problem is for us, you're not likely to buy something on spec just on the basis of, it sounds cool, because you just don't know. You could be wasting your money,
time. You can't use it. That's the thing. Yeah. So the get out clause for most of these is the ability to use it with your smart speaker. So that's all fine, but there are, you know, I want to be able to set it up myself. I want to go into the app and Ring is where it is because it was the first on the market. Simple as that. It was so impressive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But that Ring app, I'm sorry, it's accessible. It's not usable. It's clunky. There's some bits I can't really use. You know, going back to look back in your history, it's not great. It's very hit and miss. And it's had long enough. That's not going to change. That accessibility of that app is not going to change. They've set their standard and that's it. And I'm sick of it. There, I've said it. I'm sick of it. So I want something else. So if there's anything out there, anyone's got any experience, particularly of the accessibility of the companion apps of Video Door. Oh, hang on. Video Doorbells. Yes. Let me know. Thank you. feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Here's my question, because didn't Apple do some work around this with HomeKit? So certain cameras you can now view, say, on your Apple TV. You could view on your phone through the Home app.
But this is the problem.
Is that still a thing?
It's the problem with smart home stuff, though, isn't it? I mean, what's happened to Matter? Matter is the 5G of the smart home world. I mean, it was going to change everything. Where is it? What's going on? Where is this? I can use anything on my Apple HomeKit, on my iPhone, on my Apple Watch. It doesn't matter what brand it is. When is that actually happening? Because I've noticed no difference. I still need 1,000 different apps for 1,000 different brands of smart home devices on my iPhone. It's it's annoying.
Yeah, I think the problem is that there's two sides to every story on these devices. So you will get the Matter support, which means you can easily set it up and run it, I guess. And you know, if it was a smart plug, you can connect it via your Amazon Echo or device or whatever you wanted to connect it up by. But the problem is that if you want certain features, I mean, Philips Hue is a good example of this. If you want the added features and the functionality of the device, you have to go through that app. So I don't think that's a major problem, though. I mean, I think we expect that. But it does feel like especially when you buy some of these other brands, like Govi is one that I've seen quite a lot, and I've used a few of their different strip lights and stuff, and they're really good. But, you know, the app is horrible to use. It's a really horrible app to use. And you know, I would love to be able to just do that via my Home app on my iPhone. You know, like you say, you know, ideally you can just pick an app and use all of those controls, but you'll only get so much of it. What I try to do as much as possible is see if there's a skill for the Echo. And then it means I can make any adjustments if I need to dim a light or change a color of a light or whatever it is I'm wanting to do. I can do that by voice much easier. It's also kind of amusing because what I find is that I ask it to change color, and then someone will say to me later on, usually one of my TV colleagues will get on the phone with me and say, yeah, the color is not what you think it is, Stephen. You know, you said white, it's actually pink. News to me. So, you know, I don't know. I think these devices just laugh at us, to be perfectly honest.
sometimes you want it to repeat what you said, because sometimes I find that as well. It'll just go beep. Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, have
exactly.
You really?
Done what? You know? Yeah. I mean, turning lights on and off, sometimes it will just say done. Or my heating is a classic, actually. Turn off the thermostat. 5 minutes later, you're still boiling.
Yeah, that's
true. You think, hang on a minute. Why is this not turned off? And you can hear the device. You can hear the boiler is still running. Anyway, let's move on. Because look, do get in touch on that, because it'd be interesting to know what other devices out there are being used and what is accessible on the doorbell front. That's a good shout, actually, because I'm getting a bit fed up with the inaccessibility of that Ring app, so
yep.
I may get a new doorbell too.
Good. Well done.
Okay, I want to mention a couple of stories. This just came in overnight that Microsoft have announced their latest round of FOSS fund recipients. Don't ask me what that means. But what it does essentially mean for the people at NVDA, NVAccess, the company or organization behind NVDA, are one of the recipients. They will receive $10,000 US in sponsorships. And this is something which is given by Microsoft to open source projects as selected by Microsoft employees, which I think is pretty cool, supporting NVDA. I think that's great. It's a great piece of software. What's wrong with that? Not enough? You want more?
Yeah, actually, I do. I think
in the $1 million.
I understand they're not the only recipient of this prize, but I just,
it's recognition, isn't it? It's recognition. It's support recognition. For the work.
How far would that go for NVAccess? I don't know what I'm saying. I sound very ungrateful.
A lot further than $10,000 would go if you didn't have it. I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah. I think it's a good story.
I'm just mentioning it. It's a good story.
Yes. And well done
to Microsoft.
I think
it's great to see Microsoft supporting NVDA. You would think they'd be like, we've got this thing called Narrator. Hello. But actually, no. They're quite happy to promote.
Give them $1 billion and license it for every copy of Windows and give up on Narrator.
Just buy it. Just buy in NVDA.
Well, not buy it. Still keep it open source, but I would license it for use inside.
Yeah, did you see the story yesterday as well about Windows 11 in the start menu? They're trialing selling ads in that space now.
Oh,
so
this
you
is
go
awful.
To the start menu.
Yeah, no, yeah, sorry.
What is going on?
Yeah, and I've heard that Windows 10 is now getting full screen adverts for Windows 11 for people.
That's right. Yes.
Update to Windows 11, even on computers that aren't capable of running Windows 11, and they're pushing these full screen ads. I'm sorry, that is just terrible. That is not
everyone's
right.
Back to the Mac.
Okay. I can't argue with that. You've never had this problem on an Apple device, do you, with adverts being pushed? I can't argue with that.
That's one area that Apple just, that's one thing they don't do. You don't get that. Now, you will get that, though, through other ads or through apps. You will get that through apps and notifications, because one of the criticisms that Apple has with notifications is that you can't define what those notifications are. So you can't say, for example, don't give me any advertising, don't push a sale or a new product that's being made available, 50% off today type thing through a notification. You might want a notification on WhatsApp, for example, and I'm just using this as an example, to tell you you've got a message. What you don't want it to do is to say, hey, we're doing a sale on Meta Ray-Ban glasses. You would, I don't know. That's one area you can't control as much or as easily. And that's where Apple gets criticism for it. But I don't like the idea of going into the start menu and suddenly finding ads in there. I don't know. It just doesn't feel right.
Do you know
it feels
what?
A little bit, I don't know. It just feels a little bit intrusive to me.
It feels tacky. That's what it feels like from Microsoft. It just feels, okay, what are you? Is this bloatware now? Is this, arguably it always has been.
It was always bloatware, wasn't it? I mean,
all right, stop it. Stop jumping on Windows.
I love Windows. I have nothing against Windows. I don't really like what Microsoft are doing with Windows.
No, I agree.
They're adding a lot to this. And it already was quite heavy. I mean, it's always been a heavy piece of software. We said this the other day. It's a massive piece of legacy, built into Windows from way back when, that's carried on right through into Windows 11 as well, which is why I think a day one rewrite might not be a bad idea for Windows, especially as it moves towards ARM.
Maybe.
I don't think that, and you know what? Maybe there's an argument to say that, and they have the resources for this, that maybe they do that. Maybe they keep supporting Windows 11 as is, and kind of do what Apple did, rewrite to some degree. I know didn't entirely rewrite, but, essentially get around and kind of recreate the code for ARM processors, but use it as an opportunity to start bridging away from the legacy.
Legacy support is so tricky.
It's going to take a long time. I know that. I mean, that train, funnily enough, I was looking the other day, and it was so funny how this came up. I was looking at if we were going to go to Vienna again for the Zero Project conference, and of course we'll have to speak to you-know-who.
Mr. F.
Yeah, Mr. F is in charge of that. But we were kind of, I was kind of looking at the options. And one of the options is you can travel by train, which I really like the idea of. I love the idea of traveling from, say, London in England over to Vienna on the train. Yes. And I don't know if you'd fancy this, but I...
I'm slightly, yes. No, that's fine. I just got Murder on the Orient Express in my head every time. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I think those trains are fine. I think that was just a movie and a book. I don't think it was any more than that. Okay. But yeah, basically I was looking at, and what came up was the German ICE road net, as ICE rail network, I think they call it.
Yes.
In through Germany. And that's the one that runs on Windows 3.1.
Bong. Oh dear. Yeah, it's crashed. Reboot.
It just made me think about that when I was looking at it. But you know, that's the point, right? There's still a lot of upgrading to be done. Now, you can argue that companies should be on the case with that. There's also the argument that says if it ain't broke, let's not try and fix it. So I think Microsoft will always have to support that. But I think for consumers, there's an argument to say, different for business, I think, there's maybe an argument to say, maybe you split this down the middle. Maybe you say, we continue supporting the legacy for business, but we come up with something brand new for consumers. Maybe that's the way to do it. I don't know. But maybe. If you're talking bloatware and ads and all the rest of it, that's tricky. That's tricky.
I'll tell you what I would do with adverts. If you haven't activated your copy of Windows, then you're liable to see these ads. If you've put a product key in, then you don't. Simple as that.
Because you've paid your money, yeah.
They stopped their limitation on, you can install Windows now without a product key, and all you get is something on the screen, a watermark on the screen, and maybe some limitations. It used to be that you couldn't personalize the wallpapers. Well, I don't care. So it was fine, right? And I'm sure there's lots and lots of versions of Windows out there that are not activated. And in that case, if you want to push ads to them, that's fine. That's another reason why maybe you want to buy a product key. But for everyone else, it's not on. It's not a good thing to do.
And how controllable is this? Because I remember when Windows 11 came along, remember there was all those articles saying, you know, make sure you turn off personalized ads. You could go into the security settings. You could change a lot of this. You could essentially make sure that, first off, you weren't being tracked. Your online activities weren't being tracked so that they could sell you ads or put ads in front of you that were personalized. And that was something which kind of cut down a lot of that. But I suppose part of me wonders, you know, why they're doing this. I mean, I know it's all about making money. I understand that.
Well, it's pushing their own products most of the time. This isn't third-party adverts we're seeing. We're seeing Microsoft products being pushed. And yes, you can, I mean, I don't know.
But we don't know that long-term, right? I mean, it could well be third-party ads.
I would be shocked by that happening. I would be truly, if Microsoft starts selling Windows ad space, then there's something going badly wrong. But who knows?
And of course, you have to worry about all the accessibility issues that come with that for us, right? I mean, what if these ads are not accessible? How do you even know what you've got on your screen? That's kind
of exactly the point I was going to make about the start menu. I mean, I don't care. From my point of view, I mean, I'm in the privileged position of I don't care what visually is on the start menu, right? I hit the Windows key and I type what I want and I hit enter.
Yeah.
But if it starts to interfere, if focus starts jumping somewhere because something's popped up, that becomes an issue.
Moving on to Google, and they had a story out yesterday. Well, it had been picked up on, actually, by 9to5 Google. And this is another effort to make Android accessibility more accessible to more people. And this is the Android 15 Beta 1. We were talking about this just last week, which we talked about the news about Braille, which is, of course, great that a number of Braille displays will now be able to work better with Android 15 once it's launched later this year. Another thing that's been found in there is audio hints for during fingerprint unlocks. So when you're trying to unlock your phone with your fingerprint, apparently in earlier builds of Android, or I guess in current builds, you would only get audio feedback when you're registering your fingerprint data. So move left, move right, you know, up, down to get your finger onto the sensor. But when you are using the phone every day, you're not getting that information. Now, we've had people getting in touch about this before, saying this is something that irritates them about using the fingerprint sensor on their device. Well, that has changed. Here's what 9to5 Google have done. They've recorded a quick demo of what it sounds like now when you're trying to log in with your finger.
Move right, 1425 Monday the 15th of April. Move left. Fingerprint sensor. Window. 40 device unlocked.
So that's much better. I mean, that's at least giving you information. I mean, it's not a huge amount of information, but it's better than nothing, right?
Well, okay, so let's be clear on this. This is, I'm guessing, for in-screen fingerprint sensors, right? Not for something that's on the back or...
Yes, that's right.
Because you have no tactile indication of where an in-screen fingerprint sensor is. And, of course, fantastic, absolutely great news and something that's, well, I'm going to say it, isn't this long overdue? Why wasn't it? If this feature is there for when you're registering your fingerprint setup, why on earth wouldn't it be there for the lock screen, for trying to activate and unlock your phone in the first place? Yeah. I tried this the other day, actually, on a Samsung S21, which has, I believe it's that. It's got a in-screen fingerprint scanner. And at least on the Samsung, it does say it's down at the bottom in the middle. Said something like that. And it tells me when I'm not on it, it can tell when I'm, you know, clawing at the screen trying to find it. But it wasn't great. It's really difficult to use that inbuilt one. I suppose you get used to it. It's just like anything else. You get a muscle memory to whereabouts it is. But I really struggled with it. But at least it was giving me some audio cues. But this, obviously, I mean, just built in TalkBack in general is much better. So yeah, this is great. I just kind of feel... this was a bit overlooked for too long.
Gosh, so ungrateful. Okay, so moving
on.
Today, aren't I?
Sorry.
See if this makes you cheery then. It's third time lucky. So there was a product a while back, an AI product called Rewind, which was an app that ran on your computer and would record your screen and any other data, frankly, to help you remember every tab, every song, every meeting, anything you ever did on your computer. You remember this?
I do remember this. Yes. Now, I thought it was also a hardware device you wore, like a brooch, like a human humane AI pin, and I thought it just recorded audio as well. But maybe I'm dreaming that. But I do remember Rewind.
That's right. So they did actually tease a device back then called the Rewind Pendant. And this was all from a guy called Dan Soroka. He, the CEO of the company Limitless. Which is behind this, he's now come up with a new product, and this was announced, I think it was announced this week, or at least last week, because this just kind of came out of nowhere, and in perfect timing, by the way, I've got to say, perfect timing,
yes,
with the Humane AI pin reviews coming in, which obviously we were talking about yesterday, didn't go down too well with people, or certain people. So the Limitless Pendant is now part of the new whole Limitless system, which the company has launched. And yes, it is following on from that product, Rewind. So what is happening here is similar aims to what Rewind has done or did in the past. But instead of just running on your computer, you can collect data in the cloud and in the real world as well. And you can make it all available to you on any device. Now, you can still get Rewind, but this new platform is much bigger. I'm going to let you hear from Dan Soroka. This is the CEO of Limitless, talking about the new pendant. So this is the pendant, which is a device you wear, and what it's intended to do.
Today we're introducing Limitless. It is a web app, a Mac app, a Windows app, and a wearable. Limitless is a personalized AI powered by what you've seen, said, or heard. Limitless augments, not replaces, human intelligence with artificial intelligence to overcome the brain's limitations, specifically our memory and our focus. Our brains are bombarded with notifications and information. Multitasking is a myth. We can only really do one thing at a time. I'm in back-to-back meetings and I want to be 100% focused on the person I'm meeting with. Taking notes, tracking action items, and preparing for the next meeting all prevent me from connecting with a person right in front of me. Limitless automates all of this for you and more. It integrates seamlessly with all the technology you already use. Again, it's a web app, a Mac app, a Windows app, and a wearable. You can wear it as a necklace or simply attaching it to your clothes using its magnetic clasp. It is truly the world's most wearable AI. It measures only 31.9 millimeters wide and 16 millimeters thin. Despite this small form factor, it has exceptional battery life. The Limitless Pendant will offer 100 hours of real-world battery life without needing to swap battery packs throughout the day. While it is recording, an LED is always visible. You can tap it to bookmark a moment or to ask your personalized AI anything. It has an array of microphones that ensure crystal clear audio quality, even in a crowded cafe. We support Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for seamless, reliable syncing, whether you have your phone with you or not. It does all of this and looks absolutely stunning. We're offering 8 beautiful colors that will go with any outfit. Just as you wouldn't exercise without your fitness tracker, you won't want to work without your pendant. How much will the pendant cost? Just $699. That doesn't look right. Let's drop the 6. Just $99. It's cleaner.
As a talk about a swipe at humane. Wow.
I was just going to jump on that. 600. Oh, very clever.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay, so just to get some more detail on this. So this records audio only?
This records audio only, no cameras on this.
Okay, so hence the audio battery only. Life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that's going to make a big difference as well. I don't know about if it speaks back or it responds to you. I don't know because they didn't demonstrate that. It just seems to be something. You do seem to be able to ask it things, but I don't know if it can talk back to you.
It must do, surely. I mean, that would be the whole point of it. So, okay, I mean, it sounds great. I'm very interested in this. Again, how it actually works in execution is different to the little PR there, but
I think what's interesting here is this is about tying into, like, you know, Dan says there, you know, it's just about tying into other services. This is doing something, and it's interesting, in an article in The Verge, he's talking to the reporter and he says, we're trying to do things exceptionally well, not be a mile wide and an inch deep. That's a swipe at humane if ever there was one.
And it's also a very, very good point. But at the same time, so basically, what I expect this to be able to do is, for example, if I go somewhere, and they mentioned a cafe there, if I go somewhere, I expect to be able to ask this little device, you know, what did I buy at so-and-so?
Yes.
And because it's been recording the entire time, basically you're transcribing your entire life, what people say to you and what you say to people. So I would expect to be able to query that and get an instant response. Again, it comes down to how quickly you get that response. We still hit that problem of, is it quicker for me just to jump into the wallet app on my smartphone and see how much I spent rather than to ask this thing on my chest?
I don't know. I think if this can pull out information, and again, it's not recording all the, I mean, it can record all the time if you want
it
to, but he says there's a light which is activated when recording. So that tells me you activate the recording.
Well, yes, I would assume there's a way to stop it when you want.
Because surely you don't want it running all the time. I mean, that I don't know if that's useful. Well, and of course, we are talking that this is, he's kind of pitching this in a productivity sense for work.
Work, yeah.
Which
that's,
I mean,
true.
I can totally understand. Like, the amount of times I've gone to meetings and I've sat there and thought to myself, I wonder what he said about this. Or, you know, I have a terrible habit of drifting off in the middle of a meeting. No
have
offense.
You never noticed? Even in the middle of a show, we got a habit of drifting off. No, absolutely. Hey, we get to the end of an email and sometimes I think, okay, what was that?
Exactly.
What was one of the topics?
I need Limitless to come back and say, yes, Stephen, he also asked you this question. That would be amazing. So yeah, this is pretty cool. So $99, he's saying that he's going to have integration with more apps like Slack and all that, you know, Notes, for example. You know, be able to get access to all of that. I think this is a great idea. I think this is actually a much better idea and a much more useful idea today. And, you know, it's important to say this is also, as well as being a physical device, which will be available in August, apparently. That's when they're going to be shipping these out. This is a service that is available today. So you can link it in with your cloud apps and everything today. So if you do Zoom meetings or Teams meetings, you can have this thing running today. You don't need to wait for the device to show up. The device is just an additional element to it. You might not even need the pendant if you think about
it.
It's, you know,
very clever, I've got to say, because we are seeing this sort of functionality already. You know, AI built into something like Teams or Zoom or whatever it may be, and you can query a meeting. But this is just universal. This isn't per app. This is all over the place. And even with the pendant recording, even your spoken meetings in person. This is very interesting.
Listen, stick around. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking to Jakub Rožin from Estonia. He is joining us once again. You might remember he was with us in Vienna at the Zero Project conference. He was talking about the work he does for Sparrow Access. He was featured in an article in the Financial Times. We're going to talk about that next, where he talks about the use of AI and how, in some ways, if used incorrectly, it can hinder accessibility. We always talk about the value of it in accessibility, but actually it could hinder accessibility. We're going to get into that next.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Could AI hinder accessibility? Well, that is a question that has been posed by Jakub Rožín from Estonia. He runs Sparrow Access, and he has been talking to us previously here on Double Tap about the value of AI, but also how it can be a challenge to us as well if used improperly. And the most recent example of that is web overlays, where oftentimes we'll go to a website, companies employ a web overlay, which in some cases makes their website even less accessible. Jakub is with us here on Double Tap today. The last time we saw you, Jakub, it was in Vienna. We were in Vienna together.
Yeah, we were.
In person.
In the Zero Project's halls of the United Nations building.
Yeah, that's right. It was an amazing event. Did you love it? Because you seemed like you had a great time.
It was one of the most exciting conferences I've been to because of the great vibe of people around you. Everybody wants to make more accessibility happen. Instead of like it's just you and a couple of other colleagues going around a non-accessibility conference and trying to convince everybody to make more accessibility. So it was a very nice and chilled experience and lots of great people there. So yeah, I liked it much.
Well, I'm really glad you're back on with us today because we're picking up on an article that you've been featured in for the Financial Times, and this is all to do with AI. We want to talk about it, but of course, AI, everyone is talking about how wonderful it can be, and it seems like there's two views on AI at the moment, Jakub. It's like there's the everything's wonderful and life is going to be amazing, or it's going to take our jobs and kill us all. There seems to be this, there's no middle ground at the moment. Where do you stand on AI?
I see right now humanity in general or people as like a little child who has gotten a great toy and you take it everywhere and you use it all the time, play with it constantly and, you know, all day, all night. And we all are like, you cannot avoid the mention of AI. It's literally everywhere. And it very much, I agree, it does amazing things. I use it every day for various tasks. However, what's wrong with the why I have this image of people as a little child who's really excited is that a child is excited and they're purely happy with it without thinking deeper because they don't know to, right? What are the issues with the AI? What are the consequences of really using it? So today we are using AI for literally, we're trying to use it for everything. And there are people who are motivated by, I don't know, money and power or whatever to enforce it without telling us what are the problems. And the problems are there. The issue is really simple. We can trust it. We really cannot trust. It's fancy. It's very convincing. It does a lot of cool things. But what it isn't is it's trustworthy because it hallucinates. It invents stuff. It ignores sometimes things, and it doesn't often understand the context. And that is the trouble. So I'm standing in the middle ground, probably with other people who talk about those things. But yeah, I agree with you. There are lots of more people on the edges, whether they love it completely or hate it. But I'm sort of looking at it, trying to use it, but I haven't. I haven't started trusting AI with my life or with my daily kind of very important things yet. So,
which we may be asked to do at some point. Absolutely.
Yeah, we probably are.
I read a lot of articles about AI and the benefits it can bring to us as disabled people. And I'm sure you're reading these articles too. Mm. However, the substance of your Financial Times article suggests that you're finding a lot of issues already.
Well, the Financial Times took, they wanted to talk about the, what we call web accessibility overlays. So what those are is it's a piece of software which usually gets sold to somebody who owns a website. Let's say you have, you're running an online store or something like that. And then you could buy this piece of software and you install it on your website. And what they claim to do is we make your website completely accessible. We make it follow all the laws, all the legislations, all the rules, so you don't have to worry about this. Because to be honest, web accessibility, when you properly do it, it's quite complicated. It's very technical. You need to understand how different users use it. Like, you know, people, you can use computer, like using a computer with a screen reader and without, there are very, very different ways you use it, right? So you need to understand this when you are a developer. And those pieces of software want to offer a shortcut. And what they do then is using AI and complicated rules, they look at your website's code and other things, and they really try to fix it. And the trouble there is, what I already said, the AI isn't reliable. And it invents loads of useless things. Like, it makes it, usually it makes it much more horrible. Financial Times wanted to talk about those things, and I shared my views as a accessibility or web accessibility expert, and I do testing and consulting in this space. And the trouble with those situations is that while the program that is there and it breaks things, you as the, you know, hypothetical e-store owner who in a goodwill installed this piece of software, you have no idea what's actually going on. I gave this example. Here in Estonia, there was a sports club who had installed this one of those softwares on their website, and I went to their website to actually, I had no connections with them. I wanted to look up something, and I was wondering, why does my NVDA say there's a toilet seat image on their homepage? I thought this was a sports club related to, you know, sport. And it said image toilet seat, and then I found, okay, they have this little overlay widget there, which probably is doing something stupid. So I disabled this, and the toilet seat went away. So okay, they don't have a toilet seat. What happened was it looked at like a, I think they had like stylized kind of bullet points or whatever, like some round objects, which the AI thought, oh, it's an image. It hasn't have an alt text. I'm gonna tell it's an toilet seat. They had no idea, because I told them, they were really shocked. And you might encounter some embarrassing situations like that, because the AI is doing its own thing, and you have no idea what it's doing and why it's breaking those things.
But is the problem AI itself, or is it people overreaching the performance, the accuracy of AI? You mentioned hallucinations, and of course, we're all aware of them. But I think you're right, what you said at the start there. We're sort of distracted by the bells and whistles. We're so impressed of, you know, how we could interact with AI and how it interacts back with us. We almost overlook those hallucinations. Oh, let's just try another thing. But when it comes to something like accessibility checking, for example, and we've already had before AI, we've already had, you know, automated accessibility checkers.
Yeah.
But do you think it's more people are relying on them because, hey, it's got AI tagged onto the end of it, or it's using AI, so therefore I don't need to worry about it? Because there's nothing wrong with using automated accessibility checkers, but then you really need to go through that yourself to double check everything and ideally get someone who uses a screen reader, let's say, to try it out as well.
You're completely right. We are overreaching on this. We are over-trusting the system. As I said in the beginning, AI isn't completely bad, and the issue isn't really in the AI. It's the way we use it. AI is a tool. It's not a human being who understands what do we want from it. We have to tell it, and we have to know how to use this tool. So in the context of web accessibility, automated tools, as you say, they are using AI too. And what they do, the automated testing tools, is they don't they don't force any changes upon you as a visitor to the website. They are helping the developer or the owner to understand what do they need to do. And in this case, the automated tools are doing quite a good job. They're not doing everything. They cannot do everything. And that's why we need to double check those things. But it gives you a general idea. Now, what's wrong with the other way of using this is what they do today is you give this tool, the web accessibility overlay to a website, and you basically, they think that now they've done everything. Now they are accessible. That's it. And I, as a user, have just one option to use this software, which often, unfortunately, as I said, makes it worse. I probably wouldn't be as annoyed if then there would be as me as a blind person now can download something which says, okay, we're trying, you know, it's running on your computer. You can always turn it off if you don't like this. You know, if you turn it on, we try to look at the page you're currently on and make some changes to it. And if you don't like it, you turn it off. It's like, you know, the screen recognition on iPhone and the Google, right? You can always turn it on and off. If you go to an app which is inaccessible, you can turn on screen recognition, and now it does stuff to the app which tries to make it more accessible using AI. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. If it doesn't, then you just turn it off and try to do something else. And if it does, it's really great. And it's the case with those overlays as well. They might sometimes work, and they might sometimes not. And that, again, we are at the same point. We always need to double check. And that means we cannot eliminate humans from the process. It's like I can't recall where I read it, but somebody gave a very nice comparison to web accessibility overlays. If you're a blind person and you're walking around and you go to a store or a hotel or a restaurant, and on the at the door they stop you and say, hey, we have this blind person's special cane which makes our restaurant fully accessible, you have to use this. And you are using this cane, they just force this cane in your hands. You're not allowed to use your guide dog, no, because we have installed this cane system. You have to use that. You have no idea how this cane system works, and sometimes it even doesn't work, but you know, you cannot use your own assistive technologies there. And it would be totally outrageous, but that's what happens with those overlays on those websites. They force their own assistive solutions upon me without considering what I need or what I use. So, yeah.
It's interesting when you look at the data on this. So, you know, in the United States, for example, there are many, many companies that seem to be violating the Americans with Disabilities Act. Data from UsableNet says that the number of lawsuits against companies' weak compliance with accessibility regulations has increased every year to more than 4,500 cases in 2023 alone. That is up 13% from the previous year. Now, what's happened is a lot of those businesses have gone on to contact overlay companies, or the overlay companies have been in touch with the companies to say, we have a solution for you. And that solution is what we know as the overlay, or the accessibility code assistant, some might call it. But what these businesses seem to have done is expose themselves to further liabilities, because these tools are still not right, and in some cases make the website even more inaccessible.
Yeah, it's a question of awareness of or knowledge, right? They don't understand the world of accessibility. They don't actually, mostly don't. They don't realize what it means that a website is accessible, and that's why it's easy to lure them to step on a wrong path. So one solution here is to, you know, to constantly talk about and raise the awareness and understanding what it means to make your website accessible, and what actually changes on your website if it's not accessible and then when it is. So that if they have to make the decision on, you know, what should we do to fix those issues, then they would be more aware of this. It's also the question of tools. I think we should try to do two things. One is raising the awareness or understanding of accessible design from the start. We don't need to fix websites to be accessible if they were built to be accessible first. And to do that, we need to create better accessibility tools for those people who create those websites, so developers and designers and content creators. And that's where AI could do much already. It looks how you work, what you do. It looks at your code and says, oh, hey, I think you forgot to label this button, or do you know that this code needs some ARIA components, whatever, to make it accessible to screen reader users. Or it would offer, like, maybe it would be useful to do it here. Maybe you could add this so it would be more accessible. But you as a developer, as a human, need to understand what the AI is telling you to do and what's the impact of this. So in this case, we can use AI, and I don't want to say it's all bad in terms of accessibility, definitely not. But we need to have humans in the loop, and I tested a website or looked at the website which uses an overlay, and when it was off, it was a little more accessible even than with the overlay. And in the article, the overlay company representative says, "Well, it's an issue with the structure of the page." I don't really understand what this comment meant in this sense. But if you say that when you use this overlay and you're fully compliant with a law, and it clearly isn't, then whose fault is this? So, yeah, it's a very tough thing, and that's why we as accessibility professionals constantly talk about those topics. We try to do, you know, at multiple levels, try to talk very easily, because it's not only the developer you have to convince to make it accessible, it's also, you know, those guys who have the wallet and the money with them, because in the end it pays, and those people need to be explained a little differently. But because of the laws, the laws are also there to help us. In Europe, we have the European Accessibility Act, which now in the private sector, in banking and e-commerce and transportation, it demands accessibility from next year. And I have never seen so much interest in how do we actually make our websites accessible. I have people come to me and they say, well, I know there's this law and there are standards and whatever, but how do I actually make it work for people? So there's also this genuine interest. And I think that's like a counterweight to those guys who just want to automate everything and not to think about this too much.
I think you're absolutely right. I just wonder if the real issue here then, and I'm slightly worried about saying this out loud, but I'm going to say it, isn't the problem here then with the accessibility layer companies pushing this as a shortcut to accessibility, when in fact, for the most part, I've never really had a great experience of any of these overlays myself. In fact, I do find most of the time they get in the way. So isn't that really the issue? It's almost like, here you go, here's the solution, when in fact it just isn't.
This is a very good point. And a lot of those companies are doing, well, all companies doing it, do it, you know, for the money or to be profitable, obviously. But their priorities are a little much too off. They are doing this just to get another sale. They're not doing this to actually try to help their clients and help the world to be more accessible. That's what I feel. I kind of have this feeling that it's just trying to profit on the expense of actual usability. So it is the false information. If and there are some companies who create such solutions, and their marketing isn't that harsh. They say, we help to make it a little more accessible in some areas, but we cannot provide you with an actual compliance. You still need to, you know, make testing for that. And that could be fair. And, you know, at least those guys who buy it, they know what they potentially get. But it still needs to be all tested. Does it actually work? And one point we haven't really touched on yet. What's the issue with it's not just accessibility. issues on those overlays. Often those overlays, they have like a list of options or buttons. So if you go to the website, it asks you like, are you blind? Do you have motor skill disability, or do you have some cognitive disabilities, or your low vision, etc.? You have to click a button, and then it applies a set of settings to the website. It disables maybe some motions, and then it makes the keyboard focus more visible and changes some colors, etc. But the second you click this button, you have told someone that now you have some disability.
Tell me this, Jaka, because I think this is important, because I have cited friends who've said to me in the past, you know, if a website was to ask you if you're blind or not, why is that a big deal? Why does that matter? You know, if I ask you if you're a man or a woman, is that okay? And, you know, you would just surely just answer the question. But there are reasons why we may not want to tick that box. But what would they be?
Lots of things. So, like in one store or one service area, it might even not be an issue. I even maybe want to tell, let's say, my train company that I'm blind, so they would know to provide assistance, right? That's all fair. But issue there is that it's not transparent. They don't tell me they collect this information. That's one thing. And the second thing is that a lot of this information gets floated around to other folks, to advertising companies. And now suddenly, a company I am trying to buy an insurance from knows that I am blind. And they might affect this, or they know that I have a medical condition or whatever.
If you were to go for medical insurance,
yeah, exactly.
It could
and
add a premium to that, or insurance, it could add a premium.
Exactly, right. So, I might not want to disclose it all the time to companies, but now if I'm, it's obviously it's a debatable thing, because I cannot hide this really when I'm out and about in the real world, right? Because I have a cane, etc. It feels too intrusive for me to disclose it, or I'd rather do it when I want to do this and tell it to people.
It's nobody else's business.
Exactly. Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's up to you to decide when you disclose that or not.
Absolutely. And I never would know if now I'm being treated differently. I don't want to be treated differently based on my disability unless I asked for it, right? So if they secretly get this information, now they can secretly do different things. Maybe they won't show me some products because some corporate people decided, oh, well, blind people do not need to buy, I don't know, mirrors, whatever. And they will just decide
That's an interesting one. Yeah, yeah. There's an argument, I guess. But
yeah,
okay,
exactly. So I've been in meetings, not in that scale, but I've been in meetings where people say, well, we have a blind person. Maybe we shouldn't just offer them those options because they're blind anyway. And I say, well, you never do that because you never know what are the motivations. I might not buy this mirror for myself, but maybe as a gift or whatever. But people could do those decisions if they're not watched.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about what you actually do there, Jacob, and tell me about the sports website you said you helped out?
Yeah. What I do is I have a consultancy business in Estonia. We do testing for websites and mobile applications. Help them out by telling them how, and we do manual testing, obviously. We involve actual users. We have a little community here of people who are our testers, who test different aspects of those sites. And we also compare those to the relevant various standards which are needed to be compliant. And we also, offer just general consulting. If there's somebody who wants to know more or they're in the middle of the project and they really don't know how to do some things, we do that. But we actually are have expanded quite a lot. We are now providing accessibility testing also in the physical spaces like buildings and urban environments. And And as of recently, we are also doing audio description. So we're doing quite a bunch of things. We're kind of trying to be, because this was what the motivation why we started with Sparrow Access, or we call it, in Estonia, we say Ligipääsuke, is that the information how to get help with accessibility is very scattered around. So we wanted to provide this kind of one-stop shop where you can come and say, hey, I have an issue with accessibility. What could I do? Who could I talk to? And it's either us or we refer to somebody or do it together or something like that. But we try to be like the first contact to somebody who wants to make either, I don't know, their event or website or house or whatever accessible. And we're here to try to do that.
This is going to be a conversation we're going to have for a long time because, of course, a lot of these overlays are now in place and I don't imagine will be as easily removed as perhaps they could be. I mean, it's software. It could easily be turned off, but, you know, there has to be will for that. And I guess there's a re-education has to happen with these businesses to make them understand why some of these overlays don't work for us. It seems to be an ongoing conversation and one we will continue to have here for sure. But it's been great talking to you today. Thank you so much for your time and good luck with what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And what I encourage everybody always to do, I know it's tiring. I feel it too, and I always don't do this. But if you see something which is inaccessible, just try to write a very even a very short message to those companies and say, hey, I'm a disabled customer. I couldn't do this. Your website isn't accessible. You don't always need to offer solutions or detailed problem descriptions. Why? It's the issue that often those companies don't hear about us because we are so frustrated, and I really understand this. And I as I said, I personally feel that I can't cope with it every day because I would need to send away maybe 20, 30 emails every day to different companies about the issues. Yes. But still, yeah. if it's nagging enough, do send this little message, and they know that we're out there, and now they know how to to look for solutions.
Jakob, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great, as always.
Thank you.
What an amazing guy. And thanks for coming on, Jakob. That's it for today. Keep in touch. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. Tell us your thoughts on these web overlays. Also, you can call us 1-877-803-4567. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Walrus is Canada's conversation, and you're invited to take part. Download AMI's Voices of the Walrus, where professional narrators read selected articles from the magazine. Available wherever you download your AMI podcasts.